ABC Radio Australia.
One of Australia's key foreign policy initiatives is under fire for failing to meet the region's greatest needs. The $4 billion Australian Infrastructure Financing Facility provides loans and grants to build things like roads, bridges, and telecommunication cables in the region. But a new report says Australia's focus on countering China's influence is hampering the facility's impact. Joining me now is Dr. Luke Fletcher from the Australia Jubilee Research Centre. They're the ones who produced the report. Good morning to you, Dr. Fletcher.
Good morning, Priyanka. How are you?
Yes, I'm well. So what is your concern when it comes to the Australian Infrastructure Financing Facility?
Well, our report has done a sort of systematic review of the program, looking at a whole lot of issues like is there transparency in the reporting? It's called the AIFFP, the Australian Infrastructure Financing Facility for the Pacific. So I'll just call it the AIFFP. Is it leading to positive development outcomes? As you said, is there a geopolitical logic behind the projects? Is it increasing sovereign debt? Is it addressing issues such as climate change, poverty reduction? And so these are the questions that the report asks. And unfortunately, as you indicated in your introduction, in many of these areas, we find that the program's design means that it is coming up short in a lot of these areas.
Can we go into specifics? I mean, is it all these areas?
Sure.
Do you have an example, perhaps, where this facility is falling short?
Yeah, look, basically, our criticism, and it's really been a criticism all along since when it was established in 2019, is that the design of the program, whilst it makes it, because it's three quarters loan-based and only one quarter in grants, so it's a move of the aid program away from grants and towards loans, is a good vehicle in many ways for doing geopolitical lending, but not for other purposes. So, for example, because it's a loan program, it really has to go for bankable projects mostly. The vast majority of its projects have to be bankable to justify the loans. And what this means is that the program is skewed towards large infrastructure programs to the bigger economies in the region, such as PNG and Fiji, which potentially have the capacity to pay back these loans, although that's, you know, also questionable. And also to projects like large infrastructure projects, and not, as we said earlier, to things that the region really needs and really needs from our aid program, such as meeting the vast needs of climate change adaptation and other development, positive development outcomes. And so as an example, by far the biggest dollar value, even though we looked at about sort of 14 or 15 projects that are being implemented or various stages being implemented, by dollar value, the majority of the money is going to this big PNG ports redevelopment, about $620 million or so of the $1 billion or so of disbursements that we looked at. So that's almost two-thirds is going to this one program, PNG Ports Infrastructure Investment Program, and we know very little about the purpose of that because of the lack of transparency. We don't know, for example, how much of the of that ports redevelopment is going to facilitate more mining, logging, and agribusiness, such as destructive oil palm development in the country, just because we have so little information about that. So that's an example of the skewing towards these large infrastructure and large development programs, where they're sort of questionable, outcomes.
Mm. I mean, some would argue that a port and some of these big infrastructure projects that this facility is funding can be necessary and a benefit. I took a look at some of the other projects funded. There are things like funding improving airport infrastructure in Fiji, building a solar plant also in Papua New Guinea. Are there some other projects that you do see benefits in as part of this facility?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question, Priyanka. I mean, generally speaking, this is sort of, you know, in general terms, I think we're pretty comfortable and supportive of the renewable energy transition projects. You mentioned there's some solar plants in places like Palau and potentially solar developments in PNG. There's a big hydropower development in the Solomon Islands, which our contacts in the Solomons tell us is actually, in many ways, a very positive project. Despite the lack of information we got from the project documents, our research suggested that's called the Tina River Hydropower Transmission System, part of the Tina River Hydro, which we think is a pretty good project, actually. So for the renewable energy transition projects, we're pretty comfortable with them, although we would like more information to really assess them properly. But as I said, the big transport infrastructure questions that have a lot of... You're right, the ports development could be really good in PNG, but we just don't know how it's going to benefit the country. Most of the population in PNG, 90% live in small communities, farming, subsistence agriculture. Is it going to help them get their products to market? Most of that is produced for the domestic market. Very little money for these communities and for the most of the people in PNG comes from things like cash crops. That could be a big development opportunity for PNG, but we don't see any evidence so far that this is what the program is intended to help. Right. So that's a big question mark. In terms of the airports and the tourism infrastructure in Fiji, that's another good question. I mean, in theory, that could be a positive thing, but we would question whether that's really something that the aid program should be spending money on. I mean, first of all, how deep an impact on the Fiji population given that these loans are going to be paid back by the people of Fiji. Are these tourist dollars going to reach into the ordinary lives of the ordinary Fijian, or is it going to be benefiting really a small part of the population? We know that the Fiji is a tourism dependent economy, but is it the sort of broad based development that we really need for the Pacific? These are the sort of questions that we feel haven't really been asked, and it's very hard to get a handle on. Mm. So that's where the sort of critiques are coming from. If that makes sense.
And as part of your research, Dr. Fletcher, did you speak to people in the Pacific about their thoughts on these projects?
We work in the Pacific on a sort of daily basis across a number of areas. Obviously, we're looking at the aid program, but we're also on a daily basis looking at a big extraction in mining, in logging, and this sort of thing. So we have good relations with partners in PNG and Fiji and elsewhere in the Pacific. In terms of the research model for this particular report, we did have a couple of in-depth conversations when we felt with partners when we felt like we didn't have enough information. But most of the information for this particular report was a desk-based research project. So, one of the recommendations of our report, Priyanka, is that a more extensive review of the project is needed, and that would really need to be a deep dive with a lot of resources. We sort of didn't really have the resources in the organisation to do that for this particular report, but we do feel like a deep dive is needed, and those sort of conversations could happen then.
If you are just joining us here on Pacific Beat, we're speaking with Dr. Luke Fletcher. He's the Executive Director of Australia Jubilee's Research Centre. We're talking about this new report looking at Australia's funding facility for Pacific countries and how it might be falling short. One of the outcomes of this study, Dr. Fletcher, is looking at how China's and the geopolitics in the region is influencing Australia's aid decisions. What have you found?
So there's no question that some of the projects funded by this program do have geopolitical elements to them. For example, if you look at the undersea cables these are relatively, in terms of the dollar value, they're actually a relatively small part of the program because the loans are quite small. Mm-hmm. They're mostly grants actually for the undersea cables in Palau, and it was called the East Micronesia cable in the in Micronesia, Kiribati and Nauru. So they are definitely to counter sort of the Chinese attempt to establish telecommunications infrastructure in the region. No question that they're geopolitical there. That's not necessarily a problem to have. We know that sometimes, Australia and the Department of Foreign Affairs is going to want to, there's strategic competition going on you know, in the Pacific, everybody knows that. And we understand that sometimes Australian taxpayer dollars are going to be part of that geostrategic competition. We question again whether this should be part of the aid program, though. I mean, this really should be additional money not coming out of the aid budget. Its primary purpose should be for things like poverty alleviation, justice, gender programs, and particularly climate change adaptation. So we don't obviously have an issue with Australia wanting to sometimes, you know, we understand there's competition going on, but, you know, whether that's really appropriate to come to the aid program is the problem there.
Mm. And I understand this facility, this infrastructure financing facility, is a loan. They provide loans to these various projects in the Pacific. Now, often China is the one accused of debt trap diplomacy, where governments can take out big, massive loans to try and fund these projects and then have difficulty paying them back. Is Australia at risk of doing the same thing here?
I mean, the short answer is yes. The program is now $3 billion in loans and $1 billion on grants. So it's what's called a mixed facility. The Australian aid program, one of the strengths of the Australian aid program traditionally, apart from a period in the 80s where you had a similar facility being set up, is that it has been a grant-based aid program. This has come from a push in the development sector to establish a loan facility because it was perceived that something like this was needed. And we questioned it at the time when it was set up in 2019. We're still very sceptical that a loan-based program can work. We don't know enough really to be able to say it's going to increase debt problems because, for example, some of the countries that are being identified and only being given grants, if they're at the World Bank, the IMF, put them at risk of debt distress, then they're only receiving grants. The problem with that is that these at-risk countries, which is about half of the countries identified, are then only going to be able to get very small amounts of aid because the grant envelope of this is so small. And the other problem is that, therefore, in the converse of that, most of the big loans are going to go to the bigger economies like PNG and like Fiji. And therefore, it's going to be skewed towards, as I said before, these bankable projects and the big economies, which may be able to pay them back. But we don't have a business case for these big projects, like, for example, the ports program that I mentioned at the beginning of the interview. We don't have a business case because of the lack of transparency. There may well be a business case being prepared by the agencies involved, which is DFAT and Export Finance Australia. But because they're not released to the public, we don't have, civil society and the general public doesn't have any visibility on what these business cases are and whether it is going to, whether it's a sovereign borrower or whether it's a private entity who's the borrower is going to be in trouble later down the track when these loans have to be paid back. So that's the issue there.
Yeah, as we've been hearing, Dr. Fletcher, you've been calling for more transparency over this facility, the AIFFP. I much prefer that acronym rather than the full title. But there has been an independent review just last year. It didn't find any red flags. Now, of course, your study has reached different conclusions. Why do you think there is this differing opinion in light of this independent review?
Look, the review just came out a couple of weeks ago. We'd already finished the report, and we had to go back and change it. It was already with the designer. But we had a look at the review. The main issue I think there is in terms of the view were quite limited because of the way that it was the terms were set up and the way that the entity the reviewer interpreted those terms. It wasn't really able to address what we thought were the most important questions around whether. Or it wasn't not effectively anyway, whether development challenges in its partner companies are being met by this program. So it didn't successfully answer the question about whether the investments are likely to have economic and social benefits. It sort of just inferred them from the kind of theoretical setup and by sort of comparing the AIFFP to the multilateral development banks, which is not really a sufficient way to answer that question. And the other thing is the review didn't involve civil society at all. So as far as we know anyway, and certainly didn't come to us for our thoughts, given that we're the main actor in the aid sector in Australia who's been talking about this program since its inception in 2019. So, you know, we think that a proper review will have to have very different terms of reference and really needs to involve civil society in its design, because we just feel like, you know, there might have been good intentions behind that review, but it really did come up short. And then if a proper review is done, a more thorough review is done, that makes recommendations, you know, that shows that it's not really working across those criteria, then the program really needs to be redesigned. That's really important.